All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons, and I am your host, Aaron Freeman. And today, we are talking all about this upcoming quarterback class, and we'll be doing that with Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire at USA Today. And then later in the episode, we'll be joined by Locked On Pitt host Nick Faribault to talk about why Kenny Pickett isn't being mentioned as much as a Falcons target.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and a host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. Of course, Locked On Falcons, like all Locked On Sports Atlanta podcasts, free and available on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and of course on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio version drops. So guys, today we're going to be talking in depth with Mark Schofield, Touchdown Wire, about Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder. Especially, we'll touch upon Sam Howell, Matt Corral, so forgettable, and Kenny Pickett a little bit with Mark. But then later in the episode, had the chance to do a little bit of a crossover segment with Locked On Pitt host Nick Faribault. You know, I had to jump at the chance to represent the alma mater on the Locked On Daily Show. And we basically get into a conversation why Kenny Pickett, despite, you know, some people thinking he's the top quarterback in the draft class, is almost never mentioned in the conversation for the Falcons at pick number 8. And we'll get into that in depth on it today, but that's later in the episode. First up, we have Mark Schofield, Touchdown Wire at USA Today, coming up right now. So guys, you are Locked On Falcons, and once again, I am joined by Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire at USA Today. And Mark was with us a couple of weeks ago talking a little bit overview of the quarterbacks, and today we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive. Unlike last year, you know, I think we had Mark on like over the course of like 3 or 4 episodes talking about a lot of these guys. We're not going to do that quite as much this year, just because I don't think this quarterback class
next year is that.
I don't think this quarterback class merits that level of a deep dive. If the Falcons do wind up taking one of these quarterbacks, maybe we'll bring Mark back on in the month of May and take a deeper look at those guys further than what we did today. But Mark, I want to welcome you back to Locked On.
It's great to be here. Always love coming on. Always fun chatting with you before the show, after the show. Before this one, we were talking about, you know, next year's quarterback crop and how we both know in the back of our minds that the second Mr. Irrelevant hears his name called, you are going to see clips of Bryce Young and CJ Stroud and Chardon Data and Will Levis just dumped on your Twitter timeline. So if Atlanta drafts a quarterback, maybe you can ignore that. If they don't, sorry, friends, but you're going to be thrown right into the mix of it in a couple of days.
Well, look, I imagine on the day 3 coverage of some of these big networks, they're going to start getting into it.
Oh, because yeah,
they'll have nothing else to talk about, you know, in the middle of the 5th round or whatever the case may be. So folks can look forward to that. But today we'll be focused on the 2022 quarterback class, looking mostly at Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder. And let's talk a little bit more first about Malik Willis. A lot of people think he'll be the first quarterback off the board. You know, some people still think Kenny Pickett will be that guy. But in terms of what I've said on this podcast, if the Falcons were to pull the trigger on a quarterback at 8, I think it's most likely to be Malik Willis. We've talked briefly about Willis maybe fitting in a scheme similar to how the Ravens utilize Lamar Jackson, how the Eagles utilize Jalen Hurts with a lot of quarterback scheme or scheme quarterback runs. Do you agree with that assessment that that's kind of the ideal usage of Malik Willis to integrate him into the NFL and maximize maybe his ability early in his career, and then hopefully the passing efficiency and the pocket management, all the other factors that go into being a high level quarterback come with time?
Yeah, I mean, I do think, Aaron, that's sort of an ideal environment and sort of set in for Malik Willis. If you're going to try to get him on the field early, you're going to want to cater to that athletic ability, which he showed during his time at Liberty and certainly at the Senior Bowl as well. He has the athleticism to create explosive plays on the ground. You know, he's not the, like, type of runner that Lamar Jackson is. Few people are, but he's certainly the most athletic quarterback in this crop of passers and somebody that if you're going to get him on the field early, you want to cater to that. And then you sort of think about, you know, some isolated vertical routes, some vertical concepts where you can cater that arm talent that Willis brings to the table. That's certainly another way to get him involved in the passing part of playing the position. And I think the Hurts, the Jackson comparisons make a lot of sense in that regard as well. When you watch, say, the Philadelphia Eagles, what they do schematically with Hurts, it's a lot of isolated vertical routes. It's a lot of three-level flood concepts. Things that allow him to sort of read half of the field, read even a quarter of the field in a sense, and make a smart read, throw, and decision based off what he's seen from a coverage standpoint. And so I think those types of offensive systems make a lot of sense for Malik Willis. And I think, look, you know, taking a step back and thinking about the quarterback you might be willing to place that bet on at 8 overall, I think out of this group, Malik Willis makes the most sense, you know, just because when you're looking at this crop as a whole, while Desmond Ridder might be an ideal scheme fit for them, I'm not so sure 8 makes a lot of sense. You know, if you can hold on to hope that he might be there a little bit later and you can either move up a little bit for him or have him fall into your lap. But if you're going to draft somebody at 8, I think you place that massive bet on upside. And Malik Willis, that's certainly what he offers at the position.
Now, one of the things I've discussed on the podcast before when discussing Malik Willis, and we bring up Jalen Hurts and, you know, contrast that with Lamar Jackson, because that was one of the things I contrasted when it came to Malik Willis, that he feels a little bit more Jalen Hurts than he does Lamar Jackson, just because Lamar Jackson was a high level, you know, and the way I sort of simplified it was when it came to attacking the middle of the field, that's been a staple of the Ravens. That was a staple of Louisville. That was arguably what Lamar Jackson did the best when it came to attacking the middle of the field. We've seen in Philadelphia, that's kind of a barren landscape in the Eagles offense.
Yes.
When it comes to attacking the middle of the field. And my assessment of Malik Willis is, at least right now, that seems to be more the quarterback where he really, you know, did not attack the middle of the field. Now, obviously, opinions vary. How much of that is Malik Willis, the height factor, not maybe seeing over the middle of the field? How much of that is Liberty's offense, not really asking him to do those things? Where do you sort of weigh in on Malik Willis in that regard, attacking the middle of the field, an area that is typically vulnerable and you see some of the better offenses in the league typically exploit? And where do you sort of assess, you know, how much of that do you feel like can be developed and grow at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more of an incomplete on his sort of draft resume attack in the middle of the field. There are flashes, there are moments. There were moments where Liberty's offense tried to attack the middle of the field, but he didn't either see it or he didn't throw it or he didn't trust it. And there are moments when he tried to and he got burned by some great defensive plays, actually, when you're watching Malik Willis at Liberty. But it is sort of an incomplete part of the grade. And as we all know, look, if as a defensive coordinator, you can go into a week and say, we don't have to worry about the middle of the field. We don't have to drop a safety down in the box. We don't have to spin a safety down into a robber lineman. We can sort of stay in too high and protect stuff on the outside because that's where the quarterback really wants to throw the football. You're in a very good position as a defensive coordinator. So at some point, Willis is going to have to fill that out. Now, he can do that. You take a look at, for example, Justin Herbert. That was an incomplete part of his grade, was sort of layering throws in the middle of the field and attack in the middle of the field. And it was partly because, perhaps similar to Liberty, they didn't ask him to do it a ton, but he certainly showed, you know, in the time he's been in the league that he can do that with consistency. Then you see a quarterback like Russell Wilson where it's always been an incomplete for him. There are moments where some of his best plays actually come when he gives up on a route in the middle of the field and then creates outside of structure. And so, you know, whether he ends up, Malik Willis does on the Herbert side of that ledger or the Russell Wilson side of that ledger, that remains to be seen because you can develop it, you can get better at it, but maybe you don't quite get there. And part of it also becomes that dual-edged sword of an athletic quarterback, because I could say with full confidence as somebody that was an undersized quarterback and a really bad one at that, I couldn't see the middle of the field. And when I was in high school, I was able to run outside to the edges and make something happen. When I got to the college level, I couldn't because the guys were better athletes. You've had that ability, whether you're Wilson or Malik Willis or any other athletic quarterback, to make plays happen on the edges at the lower levels. Are you going to be able to do that at the higher levels? It's a nice crutch when you can rely on it, But if you can't, then you have to fill out the rest of that resume. And so it's going to be a thing for Malik Willis to sort of figure out. I think he can do it. Other quarterbacks have done it, but it remains to be seen whether he'll be able to.
Now, you mentioned sort of that ability to extend plays and make plays off structure. Is that a way that Malik Willis can sort of maybe mitigate those issues if that is a struggle for him early in the NFL, where just because of his playmaking ability, and we've seen him make some ridiculous throws, you know, rolling out to the pocket, rolling left, rolling right, and whatnot. And maybe that's going to be kind of, particularly in the case of a team like the Falcons, who don't necessarily have this really strong supporting cast around him, you know, if he is the pick and if and when, I should say when, he gets the chance to play early in his career, you're going to be relying heavily on his ability, his legs, as well as that off-structure ability. And obviously that isn't necessarily conducive to consistency in your offense, but certainly that can, you know, be something, an element that defensive coordinators are really going to struggle with, because there's really no good defense for a quarterback that can do that. And that's part of the conversation on why people are so intrigued by Malik Willis's upside.
Right, because when you start talking about an athletic quarterback like Willis, or you see some of the guys in the league that sort of play in that mold, whether it's a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes or other quarterbacks, and sort of put stress on you in those scramble drill moments, can extend plays with their legs, then you have to start thinking about dedicating resources to that threat. Do you just play zone coverage because you don't want to turn your eyes on that quarterback? You start playing man, you get your back to him, he'll just take off on you. You get burned that way. Do you start spying him on third downs? Do you dedicate an entire defensive player just to the mere possibility this player might contain or break contain in the pocket? Do you adjust your rush lanes? Do you use more of a mush rush? When you start going down that road as a defensive coordinator, you're suddenly playing catch-up. You know, I talk to any defensive coordinator and they would tell you. I remember having a conversation with Deontay Lee, now at The Athletic, who's a high school defensive coordinator, about Lamar Jackson. He said, look, if I'm playing a guy like that, I don't sleep the week leading up to that game because you're so worried about the uncertainty of it all. You might have a great stunt called or a great scheme in the secondary called, but that uncertainty of what the quarterback can do with his legs and break in the pocket and create, and is something you can't really prepare for. It's hard to simulate in practice. And so I think that will certainly help Malik Willis, and it will put pressure on defensive coordinators when he sees the field. And the other thing that Willis brings to the table are, I think, with his arm talent and with his athleticism, those are two big ways to sort of equalize things as a young quarterback, right? You may not trust what you're seeing with your eyes. You may not trust that rotation in the secondary. But if you have the arm like Malik Willis, or say before him, Josh Allen or other quarterbacks, you can take that extra sort of half second to read it out. Where if you're like, I don't see this right, I'm not so sure, I can take an extra second, you know the ball is going to get there when it needs to get there because you have that velocity. Whereas other quarterbacks, whether it's guys in this class or guys before Malik Willis, don't have that luxury. They have to be ahead of it with their mind, which puts more on their plates. Like Mac Jones and Malik Willis throwing a dig route 15 yards over the middle of the field, one of those quarterbacks has to let it go about a half second before the other, and the ball will get there at the same time. Now, it's obviously Mac Jones who has to let that fly faster. And so that's going to help Malik Willis. That athleticism will also help him. So if he doesn't like a concept, he can buy some time with his feet, see if coverage breaks down in the secondary, and then attack the defense when the structure is starting to break down in the secondary. And so I think those are going to be two big aspects of his evaluation that will help him play early. And the more and more, like I know I've said this before with you, Aaron, I used to be so dogmatic, right? Like, can he read coverages? Can he understand concepts? Can he work through progressions? Can he figure it out when the safety spins the snap? Strip that away. Can you move and survive? Can you create athletically? And can you put the football where it needs to be? Like, if you can do those two things early, you're going to be okay as a rookie quarterback, and you can start to fill in the other stuff. If you struggle with those, then you might need to have some other sort of traits to bring to the table, like the mental side of things, to rely on as a rookie. And so with Willis, the arm, the athleticism, those will certainly help him when he plays.
Absolutely. So we're going to continue this conversation here with Mark Schofield, talk a little bit more about Desmond Ridder and what he brings to the table as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. So, of course, guys, there's more to come on today's episode with Mark Schofield. But before we get there, guys, I do want to plug the Ultimate Mock Draft 2022, which has been going strong all week long on its own podcast feed, as well as the Locked On NFL feed. And of course, that mock draft is not a predictive one, but it's one that, you know, has all of the various Locked On hosts, as well as some audience experts providing their analysis on what each team should do in the first round, as well as some picks in the second round. I believe on Friday, as most of you guys are listening to this or watching this, you know, we'll be wrapping up round one. But then Monday, you got those teams that don't have a first round pick. They got some input on this thing as well. And of course, next week is the big week when it comes to the draft. And of course, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there with 3 days of live coverage, which you'll be able to find on the Locked On NFL Draft YouTube and Facebook pages. And guys, I also want to tell you about Shady Rays, an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for just a fraction of the price. What features are those? Well, what about polarized lenses, durable frames, and premium high-end finishes? That's also something that you won't be able to find anywhere else is Shady Rays' insane protection program, which includes loss and broken protection for every single pair. They'll send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happened. So just give it a try. And if you don't love your Shady Rays sunglasses, you'll pay nothing. It's that simple. In addition to looking good, you can also help a good cause as well, because every order at Shady Rays, there are 10 meals donated to fight hunger in America. So head to ShadyRays.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 50% off two or more pair of polarized sunglasses. And that's code LOCKEDON for the best deal of the season. That's 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses. And guys, I also want to tell you that, you know, baseball season is back. The NBA playoffs are kicking off. We're just a few days, I believe, weeks away from NHL playoffs, as well as the 2022 NFL draft. And whatever the sporting event that gets you geared up, BetOnline is the number one spot and number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. You can get podcasts, you get the latest odds, props, and contests. BetOnline has it all. And in addition to the NBA, MLB, NFL draft, as well as NHL, you can also bet at boxing, UFC, golf, esports, as well as play your favorite Vegas casino games. Find it all at betonline.net. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to sign up and find more information about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. With Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire USA Today, and we've talked about Malik Willis and sort of the tools that he has that are intriguing and always intrigue coaches. Desmond Ridder has similar tools, probably not quite to the same degree, but also seems to be more of that style of a guy that you can trust to run your offense. Is it fair? You know, we use that term game manager as a pejorative term, but is it fair to say that Desmond Ridder's more that game manager, but also has some intriguing tools? Is that a fair assessment of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's sort of game manager with plus size athleticism, you know, that, you know, you can at least get a solid floor from him. I think there are reasons why in sort of the like film study world, you know, whether it's guys like Nate Tice, Seth Kalina, you know, Benjamin Solak, that they're very high on Desmond Ridder because you could see evidence of him like going through that dogmatic approach I just referenced earlier, where he's like working through reads, he's getting to the backside dig, he's those spun safety looks, he's figuring that stuff out and getting to his best matchups when they go from two high to one high, or you know, when they go from one to two, he's working through concepts and he's, you know, going full field with progression. So you're gonna get that floor of pocket passer NFL quarterback, but then he offers that athletic upside, whether it was the 4.52 at the 40, you know, at the combine, where you're like, wow, okay, that's a pretty good time for an NFL quarterback. Whether it's, you know, seeing him used on designed runs and zone reads, he had a touchdown run against SMU on a 4th-and-1 where they went zone read. They did not have any fears about using him as a runner. There were moments where, you know, he picked up stuff with his legs. He had a scramble on a third down situation. I forget which game it was, but, you know, they showed pressure. They dropped into a drop eight coverage. He's like, well, I can't throw it anywhere. And he picked it up with his legs. So he can give you that sort of unexpected athleticism where you have moments where that defense coordinator is trying to take away the pass. Well, he can sort of create with his legs and give that defensive coordinator something else to think about. And so I think that's a very sort of fair way to describe him, which is he's going to give you that sort of ability to manage the game, to work through reads. He's not going to make a ton of mistakes with the football, or at least he hasn't during his time at Cincinnati. Like, there are drawbacks. Yes, there are concerns about ball placement, although I think he's improved in that area. But I think that ability to sort of take care of the football, manage the offense, while giving you those athletic flashes and spurts here and there with perhaps, like I said, that upside. That's part of the allure with him. And I think it's interesting that the conversation has sort of shifted around Ritter. You know, after the Senior Bowl, it was very much that's when you could see Malik Willis's stock sort of take off and Pickett and Ritter sort of slide in a little bit. Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl had a very good point. Now, of course, Ritter was at the Senior Bowl, and Nagy, you know, he's done a very good job at sort of talking and promoting the guys that go down there, and that's part of his job. But he pointed out that, like, now that we're getting coaches involved in the evaluation part of this, right, you're getting offensive coordinators in the room, you're getting quarterback coaches in the room, you're seeing Ritter's stock start to rise a little bit more because, you know, when you see him talk about progressions, there was a clip floating around earlier this week of him working through a verticals concept out of a 2x2 and breaking down how he goes through that. That's going to get coaches excited. And you're seeing that start to reflect in how he's being viewed around the league. Whereas, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was like, does he sneak into the first round? Now it seems like if you want to draft him, it's going to have to be in the first round. Where and how early in the first round remains to be seen, but you're probably going to have to do it in the first.
Yeah. And you touched upon the accuracy. I was trying to look up the game quickly as you were talking, but I can't remember specifically. I want to say it was like Indiana or whatever, but I remember the first game I watched of his, like he was very spotty in the first half of the game with his accuracy, seemed to settle down in the second half and started making throws. You talk about the ball placement, and that seems to be the biggest knock on Ritter is that sometimes the placement, the accuracy just seems all over the place at times. What do you owe that to in your assessment? I've heard others talk about it, you know, again, going back to that game where it was early in the game. I've heard some people say it seems to happen a little bit earlier in games where maybe he's a little bit too hyped up or something like that. And he comes out a little bit hyped up. And once he kind of settles into a rhythm and whatnot over the course of the game, you start to see those accuracy issues go away. Do you think that's a fair assessment of his game? That's something that you saw in film. Where do you think his accuracy issues can be addressed or can't be addressed? Is it a mechanical issue? I'll give you the floor.
I've certainly seen similar, you know, that there is that school of thought that, you know, two seasons ago, it was more consistent, the inconsistency with the ball placement, so to speak. I think this past season, you've seen improvement with the ball placement overall, but it still crops up in the early part of games. It's not a situation where I could say like, yeah, okay, he's locking up his front leg. He's flailing that left hip open. Like, you know, the release point is all over the place. Like, it's not a situation where I can look at something structurally and say, like, yeah, that's the reason why he's missing throws. And it's, you know, the fact that he's bad sometimes early in the game, but gets better. It's not like things are really changing structurally over the flow of a single game where, you know, it's a mechanical issue. I do think that there is merit to the argument that he's either hyped up early or he's working through things mentally earlier in the games. And as he starts to settle in and he's like, okay, now, yeah, they're doing what I thought what they were going to do from a coverage standpoint, from a conceptual play calling standpoint where I don't have to worry about that so much. I don't have to speed myself up. I don't have to fly through region, things like that. I can just play. And then he sort of settles in and the ball placement is better. But it does remain a concern. I mean, you can be down 35-0 because you've thrown a couple of interceptions early in an NFL game. Like that's not often a recipe for winning football games on Sundays. And so he's going to have to sort of figure this part out. Now, to his credit, he has improved in ball placement overall. He has improved in accuracy overall. And this just shows you that, yeah, you know, he can do it. Now it's just a part of, okay, you're good in the final like 3.5 quarters or the final 3 quarters. Now let's be good with the ball placement for all 4. If you can give me that, we got something to work with.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Ritter seems to be a little bit better of a scheme fit for what the Falcons do in their Arthur Smith Shanahan derivative offense. I agree with you, but I'll give you the floor to sort of break down for the listeners and the viewers, you know, sort of where why you think that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, it can almost come from Ritter's mouth himself. I mean, when he talked to us at the combine, he said, look, a quarterback, I sort of, you know, try to model my game after is Ryan Tannehill. Others have sort of, and I've compared him to Marcus Mariota. And Arthur Smith obviously turned Ryan Tannehill into the quarterback he is now with that offensive system. And they went out and added Marcus Mariota. I mean, don't take it from me. Like, that's from the quarterback himself and from the organization going and getting a guy in Marcus Mariota that sort of is very similar from a play style standpoint, perhaps to Desmond Ritter. And so I think there's evidence that the fit is there. But I also think that, look, when you look at what Arthur Smith wants to do, where he wants that sort of offense to be, you know, play action designs, you know, some RPO elements where you're giving the quarterback, you know, an isolated route on one side or the other, you know, the decision to pull a throw, which is something that, you know, Desmond Ridder has shown at times during his career at Cincinnati. The fit makes a lot of sense, you know, and I think when you start thinking about filling in the offense around stuff like that with some extra concepts, some 2x2 stuff, some, you know, concepts to both sides of the field where you want that quarterback to really stress that defense sideline to sideline. You don't feel the need to isolate one half of the field. That's also something that Desmond Ridder can give you. And it starts to unlock some of the run stuff you want to do, some of the RPO stuff you want to do when you really start to stress that opposing defense sideline to sideline. And so I think from a pure schematic match between quarterback and offense and quarterback and organization in this draft, Ridder to Atlanta makes one of them perhaps the most sense to me. You know, it's just a matter of, are you going to do it at 8 or are you going to wait and see if there's a possibility to do it a little later in the first?
So jumping here to interject, now that we've wrapped up the conversation about Desmond Ridder, but we've still got a little bit more to talk about with Mark Schofield about Sam Howell, Matt Corral, and Kenny Pickett. And then later in the episode, of course, we'll be taking a deeper dive on Pickett with Locked On Pitt host Nick Faribault. But, you know, before we get there, guys, you know, this is going to be a little bit of a longer episode. And to endure these longer podcasts, you want to get that energy. And of course, the best place to get that energy is from Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar, even better than a candy bar, because Built Bars not only taste good, they're good for you. They're low in sugar, low in calories, low in carbs, but high in protein, high in fiber. You know, all spring long, Built Bar has been pushing their Puff flavors, which is the first protein infused marshmallow. And you can get those in a variety of flavors like churro puff, coconut marshmallow, mint marshmallow, banana cream pie, or you can get tried and true flavors like salted caramel, coconut almond, or peanut butter brownie, or you can get a, you know, that boost first thing in the morning with a delicious blueberry muffin Built Bar, or you can wrap up your night with a delicious dessert like raspberry cheesecake. You can find all these flavors available at built.com. And of course, when you head on over to built.com, make sure you use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Now, you talk about scheme fit, and the Falcons have done some workouts with guys like Sam Howell out of UNC and Matt Corral out of Ole Miss. And I guess my question is, between those two, who sort of do you see as a maybe a better scheme fit for what the Falcons want to do? I know for me personally, I like a little bit more Sam Howell. I feel like the plus traits that he has over Matt Corral make him a little bit more intriguing to me. But I'm curious for you, if you're, you know, consulting with the Falcons, maybe is there one of those two guys that you may gravitate a little bit more towards?
Yeah. While I have Matt Corral graded over Howell sort of in a vacuum, I think when you start talking with like scheme fits, I think how I'm with you, Aaron, I sort of like Howell more in this offense over Matt Corral. You know, I think Corral, there's certainly a path for him to work in this kind of system. There's a path to him to be a good NFL quarterback. But I think Howell's ability, one, to throw the deep ball, he might be one of the better, if not the best, deep ball thrower in this class with touch, precision, and things like that. I think that would be a nice fit for what Atlanta wants to do, because if you're trying to, you know, you look at that Tennessee offense under Arthur Smith and some of the other stuff that Smith has tried to do when you're trying to, you know, create some shot plays off play action and of that nature, the ability to sort of do that and have throw that deep ball well is something that Howell brings to the table. So I think that part of it fits well. I think what Howell showed last year as an athlete, you know, 853 yards or something like that as a runner, that's also a nice little component to add to this offense, particularly like you said, with, you know, the surrounding talent and questions about that. You know, he sort of saw a similar drain of talent, Michael Carter, I mean, to the NFL, Javonte Williams, D'Ami Brown. So he's like, all right, well, I'll run the football a little bit more. And I think that's a nice little thing to add, and something that I think really speaks to the kind of football player he is. And the fact that he was able to do that for UNC last year, I think, was a huge part of the success that he had and the success that team had. And so when you're talking about Atlanta, you know, when you're talking about, okay, they don't go early, they go a different position at 8. Now you're on the clock at 43. You've got Howell and Corral staring you in the face. The pick that makes more sense to me would be Howell.
Okay. Last question. Kenny Pickett. Is the game manager label what's appropriate for Kenny Pickett? I've heard some people say he's a game manager, but he's not even that great at managing games. I'm curious where you sort of fall on Kenny Pickett's evaluation.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like Kenny Pickett as a quarterback. And I think that, you know, the evaluation with him is similar in a sense to Mac Jones, where it's like, you know, he can sort of take care of the football. You know, you could see him running NFL concepts. You could see him attack in the middle of the field. And there are flashes of athleticism with Kenny Pickett. I think he's a better athlete than Mac Jones. I mean, there are certainly questions. I mean, there are questions with his response to pressure in the pocket. This is one of the biggest questions I have with him. If he knows where it's coming from and he can sort of get ahead of it with his mind, he's okay. But if he sees one of those things where they mug up the A-gaps with the two linebackers and they actually drop and they come off the edges and he's not expecting it, that's when you see sort of some inconsistent reactions to that secondary flash of pressure where he's a bit little erratic at it. And I think he needs to clean that up. And, of course, look, there is the hand size component. But I think, you know, I often come back to the idea of, you know, if the Saints, for example, decide to draft a quarterback, I don't even know if they do at this point, but – you know, playing at least half of your games in a dome plus the game in Atlanta, you know, you can kind of alleviate that concern. It would be a similar, obviously, discussion with Atlanta. If you're worried about hand size, he's playing all his home games in a dome. You get the game in New Orleans at the dome. You're playing, you know, a game at Carolina, a game at Tampa Bay where the weather isn't always a factor. That might sort of alleviate those concerns. I mean, I think Pickett is a very good quarterback. I think that the growth he showed at Pittsburgh, you know, is impressive. I think he's going to need to play behind a very good offensive line. I think in a sense, he's similar to Baker Mayfield in that respect. He's going to need a lot of help around him to be the best quarterback he can be at the next level. If you think Atlanta is that environment, fantastic. But I think others will say, no, he needs, you know, a completely fantastic offensive line, a lot of weapons around him. I mean, part of the reason we're talking about Kenny Pickett is because of Jordan Addison. And, you know, we joked earlier about, oh, we're going to get the early draft takes. Well, start and make sure Jordan Addison is on your watch list. He's a fantastic receiver, and he's in many reasons why we might hear him, Kenny Pickett's name, call off the board in the first round is because of what Jordan, like, Pickett had a throw late in one of their games where it should have been a pick, and Addison ripped it away from the defender at the catch point. Like, Jordan Addison is a fantastic football player. I think Kenny Pickett goes in the first round, but it might be sort of in that 20s range at this point.
Quick question on Pickett. It makes it sound like if he went to a team that had a veteran center, that would probably be an ideal situation for him that could help mitigate some of those pocket pass rush issues. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely, Aaron. I mean, I think he's somebody that's going to need some veterans around him to sort of, you know, help him from a pass rush, pass protection standpoint. Like, you know, he can get there. You know, but the sort of fear that I have with him, at least early in his career, and I do think that Pickett and Ritter are guys, and Willis with his athleticism, that can play early, maybe not week one, but like weeks 4, 6, 8, whatever your timetable is as an organization. But I think we know what's going to happen with Pickett because of that inconsistency with simulated pressure looks. He's going to see him until he figures it out. So having veterans around, having a veteran center that's going to be like, yeah, this we'll get into this protection scheme. We'll get into this slide. We'll get into this check because of what we're showing. Because I can tell you, you might not know it, but that guy's coming, not the guy staring at you. This guy is the one that's coming. That will certainly be a benefit to Kenny Pickett.
Absolutely. Well, my bad to my guy, Carson Strong. Won't get enough love on this podcast, but, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, that he'll be the Falcons pick at some point on day two or day three, and I can have you come back on, Marcus.
Yeah, I would love to come on and talk some Carson Strong because, you know, like I said, in a vacuum, I mentioned Matt Corral over Sam Howell. I had Strong at 5, too. I mean, I don't know if Carson Strong goes in the first round or even the second round. There's certainly that medical concern, and the player I compared him to is Drew Bledsoe. And, I mean, I don't know if Drew Bledsoe is a – day one or day two quarterback in today's NFL, even though he went, you know, first overall when he was drafted. I think the league has changed and you need that mobility, but he has a fantastic arm and does a lot of stuff from a mental perspective that I really like. And so if he ends up in Atlanta, I will be more than happy to come on and chat some Carson Strong with you.
Okay. Well, we look forward to that. Mark, let the people know where they can find your other stuff about these quarterbacks, about this draft, and of course, about the NFL. And when those Bryce Young versus CJ Stroud versus Will Levis conversations eventually come, where will you be?
Aaron, it's always a blast coming on. At Mark Schofield on the Bird app, USA Today's Touchdown Wire. And yeah, you will probably see, even though I mocked it, you know, even though I made fun of it, and you'll probably see a piece for me at some point soon about the 2023 quarterback class. I'm not going to try to shove it down everybody's throat the Saturday the draft ends, but maybe that Monday, maybe.
Okay. I look forward to reading it. Hopefully, Falcons won't go too crazy and take a quarterback early, so it will be applicable to
there
what
we
the may be looking forward to next year. And we can push Falcon fans over there so that we can start getting our takes off all summer long.
It is going to be like, I put together my initial watch list a while back, and I've already done obviously some work on this group. Like, there were like 15 names on that list, like, already, and I haven't started, you know, expanding that net. It's going to be a fun summer. The takes are going to be all over the place. So just prepare yourselves, everybody, especially Atlanta fans. If they don't draft a quarterback early in this one, it's going to be a long summer.
Okay. I look forward to it. I look forward to it. I don't know if anybody else is looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic.
All right, my friend. So there we are wrapping up with Mark Schofield, but we still got more to come, guys, here with Nick Faribault, the host of Locked On Pitt, to talk a little bit more about Kenny Pickett and why he's not getting as much love in these Atlanta streets, at least as far as mock drafts with the Falcons. Speaking of Atlanta streets, let's talk a little bit about Locked On Sports Atlanta, the podcast family that provides all the coverage of all the Atlanta and Georgia-based sports teams, let alone the Falcons, the Hawks, the Braves, the Bulldogs, Georgia Tech, the United, etc. And you can find them all on its own podcast feed, Locked On Sports Atlanta, on your preferred podcast platform. And you're getting great shows like A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanisha Batiste. I purposely like say it correct, and I still couldn't get it right. Hitting Hard with John Chuckery. And of course, you can find them all on Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast platform, including on YouTube. So let's start that conversation with Nick Faribault of Locked On Pitt right now.
Hello, folks. Welcome to a special edition of the Locked On Pitt podcast. You see that crossover graphic, and I am joined here by Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons, and yes, also fellow Pitt alum, Aaron Freeman. So yes, we have more than just me as a Pitt alum in the Locked On Podcast Network. Trust me, there's plenty of hailing to Pitt going on, if you will. But today's topic is all about Mr. One Kenny Pickett. Obviously, we are doing the tour here on the Locked On Pitt podcast. It's Locked On Kenny Pickett Week, if you will. We are doing the whole tour of the league, seeing where he could land in the NFL draft. But Falcons are certainly one of those. Aaron, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Glad to be on Locked On Pitt, finally making my debut, talking about the one and true only QB1, Kenny Pickett, in this draft class.
Yeah, and talking about Kenny Pickett, we've talked a little bit already with guys from the Panthers. I've talked with Ross from the Saints. We've talked with all these guys. NFC South has been a focus, and Kenny Pickett could find himself in the NFC South. We have not talked about the Falcons, though, yet. And the Falcons are kind of in that area where they could draft a quarterback. Maybe they won't. They have other needs where they could draft someone else. And most of the quarterback talk around them has been Malik Willis. He's an Atlanta native, so that's been the talk. But not a lot of Kenny Pickett to Atlanta talk at 8. But with no Matt Ryan there, there's always a possibility that it could happen. Quarterback needy team, Kenny Pickett, could he be QB1 on their board? It's possible. Do you think there's a chance here, or how's the chatter been going around Kenny Pickett to Atlanta, and is it possible?
Yeah, I think it makes sense for the Falcons to be interested in Kenny Pickett. He checks a lot of the boxes. When you look at the players that project well in this Arthur Smith, West Coast, Shanahan style of offense, you look at guys like Desmond Ridder out of Cincinnati, you look at guys like Kenny Pickett out of Pitt that run concepts that are comparable to what they'll be asked to run in the NFL. So from a scheme fit standpoint, I think you probably put Ridder 1 on that list, but Pickett would be a very close second on the list. So it makes a ton of sense for the Falcons to be interested in it, but you don't hear the sort of chatter that the Falcons are realistically considering him, particularly in round one. And I think it makes sense because, you know, as good as Kenny Pickett is, and I think he's the best quarterback prospect in this draft class, he's not necessarily a guy that you traditionally look at as sort of a top 10 franchise, you know, put this guy on your back. And I think part of it is because the Falcons just got out of a long marriage with Matt Ryan. And, you know, even the best version of Kenny Pickett probably is not going to be quite Matt Ryan. He might be Matt Ryan light, sort of speak. And I think if you're the Falcons, you're maybe looking for a different element, a different dimension. And then you couple that with the notion that, you know, a lot of people expect Kenny Pickett to be off the board by the time the Falcons pick at eighth, because a lot of people are projecting him to go to a team like Carolina at pick number six. So I think in a world where the Falcons land Kenny Pickett, it's probably not in the first round. It's probably a scenario where we see the NFL being hand-sized queens, as they say, and saying, look, the hand-size issue, and I'm sure, Nick, you don't think it's an issue. I don't think it's an issue. I don't think a lot of people think it's an issue. But you just need a couple of general managers and head coaches in the NFL to think it's an issue. And you start to see Kenny Pickett slide in round one and potentially fall into the back end of round one and be maybe the third quarterback off the board after Malik Willis, after Desmond Ridder. And then I think the Falcons may look at that and say, look, Kenny Pickett, we didn't love him at eight, but, you know, in the late 20s and the early 30s, maybe we go up and get this guy and stop this slide, because he is clearly the best quarterback left on the board and we need to look ahead to the Falcons' long-term future. So I think that's really the more realistic scenario for the Falcons to nab Kenny Pickett if he slides all the way to the back end of round one, going and getting him rather than getting him at the top of the first round.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I love the Pickett fit in Atlanta. I really do like his fit with Arthur Smith and kind of what he runs and kind of like what they do. I think that he is the type of quarterback that just fits exactly what they have, running that pro-style system, as you said. And again, though, they do have a lot of needs. So Pickett is just one of the notches in the belt, if you will. There's a lot of rumors. You know, I think Jameson Williams has now been smoked a little bit there. But there's more guys. You know, I know there's plenty of edge rushers that's been talked about. Plenty of guys that have been talked about there at eight. And Pickett hasn't really come up. And again, if the quarterback topic has come up, you kind of mentioned the two names. It's been Willis or Ridder. And that's kind of interesting to me, because I think Pickett is such a natural fit in Atlanta. So I guess the question I have for you is then, if say they do go Ridder over Pickett, and they maybe they do come up and you know, Ridder falls a little bit and they go and get Ridder, what attracts them to Ridder specifically over Pickett? Is it the athleticism? You know, not that Pickett's not athletic. He can move outside the pocket, but Ridder's a different athlete than him. So is Malik Willis. What is it about those guys that could attract them to them over Kenny Pickett? And do you think that philosophy could be a mistake for the Falcons?
Yeah, I think the main issues that you're looking at when you compare Pickett to the other top quarterbacks, which is Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder, is, you know, both of those guys are a little bit better athletes. Again, as you said, Kenny Pickett is no slouch in that department, more than capable of making plays with his legs. But I think both of those guys are maybe just a tier above, you know, above where Kenny Pickett is with that athleticism, to be, you know, capable runners at the next level. And I think probably the arm strength is probably the thing. We know Malik Willis has the best arm in this draft class. And I think while Desmond Ridder doesn't have a cannon, I feel like his ability to throw the vertical routes is probably a little touch better. I think you're getting a little bit more consistency on some of those deeper throws that, you know, potentially if you're a team like the Falcons and you looked at your offense last year without Calvin Ridley, without Julio Jones, you lacked explosiveness at that position, and you want to have maybe a quarterback that can do a little bit better job than Kenny Pickett at exploiting all three levels of the defense. And I think Desmond Ridder has the arm strength. I think the thing that Kenny Pickett has over some of those other guys that we're talking about is the accuracy and sort of being able to slice and dice defenses on the shorter and intermediate throws. But maybe some of those vertical throws is where he's not going to necessarily do his best football.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's a few things you've talked about with the vertical routes. Not that Kenny doesn't have good arm strength. I think he has decent arm strength. I just don't think it's a cannon, as you said. I think he can get it there. We saw it this year. It felt like this year, and you could probably attest to this, whenever I was watching him, just the balls had just died a little bit short. Felt like Addison, when he was on, obviously Jordan Addison, his main target, had to stop a little bit when he was trying to get under them, just a little bit. So not great arm strength, pretty average arm strength overall. And then the hand size, that's going to be an issue for some teams. I don't know what the Falcons' philosophy is on their hand size. I know there are some teams, I remember the Broncos talking about how they had strict hand size kind of measurements. I don't know what Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith think in that regard. I don't see it as much of an issue outside of maybe, you know, super rainy, snowy days where you might have an issue with the gloves, and then fumbles could be an issue. But I don't see it as a huge issue. The only other thing I could think of that would be another issue for Kenny Pickett is the pocket management. He gets a little skittish in the pocket, but I think he's a really good type of quarterback. And I think in Atlanta, he'd come in and push Marcus Mariota right away for that starting job. But I think you kind of looked at it and you said, Mariota is kind of in the same type of vein as, say, a Ritter or a Willis and kind of his athleticism, what he wants to do. So that's kind of what they want to do over, say, someone like a Pickett, who's not a super athlete. He's a decent athlete for the position, can move outside the pocket, can extend plays, but he's not going to, you know, be a burner. He's not going to be a design QB run type of guy. And I think that's what maybe they're looking for. And that's kind of the divide between Pickett and the Falcons and why he wouldn't be their pick at eight, but maybe could be a pick in the back half of that first round, just because he is looking like a really solid quarterback prospect.
Yeah, I think it boils down to, you know, if you're going to take a swing at a quarterback at the early first round, you want that guy to create buzz. And the knock on Kenny Pickett is he's not going to get anybody excited about, you know, hey, this guy's going to be a superstar at the next level. It's like he's going to be a solid NFL starter, probably an above average starter. He's going to be a guy that can keep you, I think, in playoff contention year after year. But like, he's not going to be one of these guys that you're going to sit here and write home about and say, this is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And I think with some of these other quarterbacks, people, while I'm skeptical on sort of the Malik Willis and Desmond Ridders on whether or not they can get there, I think some of these guys at least have the buzz that there's a lot of people that are fans of them around the league and on draft Twitter and elsewhere that sort of feel like those guys create a little bit more buzz. And I think that's kind of the thing that hurts Kenny Pickett right now. It's like he's a safe, solid quarterback. He's probably going to be the safest choice for a team, whoever winds up picking him among this draft class, but he's just not going to be having basically the sex appeal that some of these other quarterbacks are going to have. And I think that's part of the reason why you don't see Atlanta connected with him, because right now I think the Falcons maybe are looking for a little bit more sizzle and sex appeal at that quarterback position moving forward than what they've had for the last 14 years with Matt Ryan, who was a very good but also a very sort of safe and solid type of quarterback.
Yeah, especially with Malik Willis, right, that the Atlanta native certainly would get a lot of the buzz. He's certainly the sexy pick of them all, if you look at it. Ritter, a little less so, but still has that buzz that would bring him, you know, proven winner, a guy that went to the playoff, took a team like Cincinnati, the first G5 team ever in the playoff, has that kind of winner's mentality. He's a little bit more flashy, can really run the ball, just was kind of underutilized there in Cincinnati. And so I agree. I think Pickett is a safe, solid quarterback, will be for a long time, but maybe – just doesn't have the same buzz. Aaron, where can people find you? You can find me at Nick Faribault on Twitter. Read my stuff over at Pittsburgh Sports Now. Write about Pitt there. But Aaron, where can they find you, man?
Of course, they can find me Locked On Falcons every single day. And, of course, on Twitter, at FalcFans. Yeah, Nick, it's been great chatting with you about Kenny Pickett. Look forward to his future in the NFL. Unfortunately, if he does wind up in Carolina, I'm going to have to find a way to root against him, which I don't want to see happen. So I'm hoping that Carolina goes in a different direction so I don't have to do that for the next 10 years. So, guys, that's going to do it for us here on today's episode. A long one, but, you know, these quarterback conversations are not something that you can just sort of briefly get into. And as I mentioned to Mark, we didn't really get into the deep dives this year like we did last year. And you know, if we wind up drafting a quarterback, which I think will be the case, but we'll see how that goes. I know, you know, I've heard Josh Kendall of Athletic and Mike Rothstein of ESPN, you know, sort of in some of the things that they've written and recorded over the last week, kind of throw a little bit more cold water on the idea of the Falcons taking a quarterback, which, you know, makes potential sense. I think, you know, they'll either have to reach on a guy at some point in the draft, or, you know, the board might not fall that way. And if they're truly, you know, sticking to that best player available scenario, you know, there's really like five or six guys that you feel good about drafting in this draft class, depending on your perspective. You know, I might throw a seventh guy in there, but like, you know, if the board doesn't fall a certain way, then, you know, you may wind up passing on those guys. So we'll see how it all plays out. And of course, if the Falcons do wind up taking a quarterback, we will spend plenty of time in the month of May talking about that quarterback and get people like Mark Schofield, as well as others on the show, to give their opinion on that guy and what you guys can look forward to on next week's show to kick off our big week of draft coverage, as we've been covering the draft all month long in the month of April. But obviously we got a mock draft Monday, and probably what I plan on doing, at least as I'm sitting here telling you right now, is to go through the first round and give you sort of my, I don't know if it's going to be final. It'll probably be semifinal. It'll depend on how I feel on Sunday when I sit down and record, you know, how confident I am with that prediction, which is probably not going to be very confident. I remember the last time we did this, which was in the 2020 draft, the Monday before that draft, you know, I felt pretty good about that first round. And this year I have no clue sitting here right now. So we'll see if that changes in the next 48 hours as you guys get geared up for that. But that's the plan for Mock Draft Monday, and you'll get my, I guess, my semi-official final prediction for who the Falcons will take on Monday, and then that will be subject to change probably by the time we get to Wednesday or Thursday. So we'll see how that goes, but that's the plan for next week. We'll have a couple of other guests talk a little bit more about what the Falcons will actually do next week as we get geared up for that big Thursday night. And of course, Locked On Podcast Network will have you covered with the live coverage, I believe. I'll probably confirm this on Monday, but we'll probably do a little mini live show before the draft kicks off, around, you know, an hour before the draft or so. So you can, of course, you'll be able to check that out on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel. But that's the plan right now. So, you know, I should be able to have that fully confirmed and all that sort of worked out by the time we get to Monday. So that'll be the official announcement. But, you know, for you guys that listen to the show every day, you get a little bit of an early Christmas present, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. Okay, I'm done rambling at this point, guys. That will do it for us. Make sure you check out Locked On NFL Draft to get you geared up for this draft in ahead of that live coverage that comes next week. So, guys, I appreciate you tuning in. If you want to provide any feedback to anything I've discussed on today's episode or anything you want me to discuss on future episodes, of course, you can do so by hitting me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Or, of course, you can leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.